Howdy, it is Saturday, January the 9th, 2016. I can't believe we're all still here, but that's good news. Anyways, I'm sure people have been reading about the recent financial troubles in China, and just as a boilerplate, you know, caveat emptor, I do not claim to be a China expert. I have a background that is mostly, as far as academics go, mostly in terms of recent years, computer science and informatics a long time ago. Back in the 90s, I studied a fair amount of history. I have a bachelor's and master's degree in history, but that was mostly Russian history. So I don't claim to be a China expert. I suppose I'm a China observer because, you know, how can you not watch China and be interested in the future of the global economic world, you know, basically. So yeah, if you're interested in the current economy and the future of the U.S. economy and, frankly, the global economy, you have to observe China. You have to show some interest, and you should have some knowledge of their history. And I think China is a bundle of contradictions in many ways, especially in the Western mindset. I think that there's a lot of racism that goes into people's perspective concerning China, both on the good side and the bad side. I think that there are a lot of people who look at China today and they see the illusion of a kind of monolithic culture that is sort of directed towards some singular future. And so they make this assumption that, excuse me, unlike the U.S., that gives them an advantage. And number one, I think the assumption, the first assumption is probably flawed. That is that China is monolithic. But even if they were, the second assumption is probably flawed as well, that it gives anybody an advantage to be monolithic in any cultural sense. So I look at China today and I say to myself, I don't say to myself, China is doomed to fail or China is doomed to succeed. I think China has challenges as a nation that are more or less equivalent in many ways to the challenges that the U.S. faces today. They're different because a lot of China's economic growth has been quite recent in the last few decades. And I also think that it's different in other ways as well. But there are similarities. But even where the differences exist, they are kind of asymmetric and complementary in a kind of negative way, which is to say that China has become an industrial workhorse, an industrial, you know, foundry for the planet as long as they have customers. And the U.S. has kind of become like Great Britain post-World War I. You know, we have more or less tried to become the service industry, financialization industry, bullshit industry, entertainment industry, you know, workhorse for the planet, as if those things are important, as if those things are necessary. They're really not. And yes, we still have raw materials, and yes, we still farm, and we still grow shit. I mean, of course, one can ask whether, you know, how much of that is stuff we should actually be eating, especially when it comes to cancer rates. But yes, we still grow stuff with all that Monsanto shit that we grow. This relationship between China and the U.S. has not been, I think, a functional relationship. It's been extraordinarily dysfunctional. It has been a case of where we have taken advantage of China's desire to modernize, and China has taken advantage of our desire to be a bunch of lazy fucks. And at the end of the day, I think the only outcome is going to be a terrible day for both parties. I think that we will wake up sometime in the future, and those HD TVs that we pay $400 for now are probably going to be 10 times that much, and that's if we're lucky. And China is going to wake up some point in the future, and I don't think it's that far away, where they're going to certainly have the ability to produce all kinds of shit, but basically no one to buy it. And the problem is their internal population, for the most part, is desperately poor. Now, yes, it is true. China's developed a kind of quasi-middle class of a few hundred million people. But most of China, by any standard, is still desperately poor today, or at least very close to being desperately poor. So this situation for China is by no means a slam dunk. All these folks who say all China has to do is declare a gold-backed currency. Well, that would more or less, you know, cut off the nose and it would spite the face, because the net effect of China's super strong currency is to exclude the U.S. and a whole bunch of other markets from them. Now, you could say, well, China doesn't need them because they've got India and Africa and Venezuela and some fucking ash trash country someplace on butt crack nowhere. Yeah, China might have all the butt crack nowhere pieces of property on the planet right now. But I hate to break it to you, there's a reason why it's been easy for China to grab those pieces on the map. You know, we're talking about Oriental Avenue, okay? If we're talking Monopoly, we're talking that first strip of land, you know, basically where the prostitutes hang out. So yes, it is true. China has tried to expand with its Asian Infrastructure Bank, a kind of little mini quasi-empire. But I really don't think people understand. I don't think people truly understand how much further they'd have to go to replace the U.S. consumer. So this relationship, this dysfunctional relationship, hurts both parties. And it is falling apart. If you look at the world trade numbers, Baltic Dry Index, you know, the COMEX, measures of container trade, it is falling apart. It's falling apart at the seams. And I guess I want to leave this whole conversation by saying the following. I do not believe there's some conspiracy to do all of this on any true level. I think that there could be conspiracies to try to control this. I'm sure that there are people, like at the Federal Reserve, who believe that they're masters of the universe. But I also think that's kind of a delusion. I think anyone who believes there's some magical escape hatch, some magical safe haven, anyone who believes that you're going to get on a plane and find some magical corner of the planet that will be unimpacted by the coming deluge, I think you're living in a fantasy world. You know, we're all on the same airplane. We're all traveling at several hundred miles per hour thanks to central bank planning. And we are way too far up in the air to glide down. So yeah, I don't think there's a magical place you're going to go to. I don't think China's taking over the world. I was not afraid Japan was going to take over the world in 1987, and I am not afraid China's going to take over the world in 2016. I am kind of afraid, not so much afraid, but I recognize the fact, the simple fact, that we are on the verge of some major change, and that on a basic level, you need to understand this. Entropy is not a conspiracy. The fact that those structures that we've all taken for granted are starting to fall apart is not a conspiracy. It might simply be the laws of thermodynamics at work. Accept it, live with it. Entropy is not a conspiracy. If China starts to fall apart, it isn't because of the Jews, it isn't because of the Western bankers. If China falls apart, just like us, it'll be because of a terribly dysfunctional economic relationship. And both parties suffer from it. Believe me, it won't just be China. It'll be everywhere. Entropy is not a conspiracy.